Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 113 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So we are broadcasting on Father's Day from rainy, dreary, but yet pleasant Lawrenceville, Georgia. I think a lot of the central part of the country is super, super hot. And so although it's not the most beautiful weather, it is quite pleasant outside.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we were we're feeling all the effects of the tropical storm that's coming through.
I guess. I know we had a flash flood warning this weekend, and we've not really seen that much rain. I was able to get out for about an hour this morning and just kind of drizzled a little bit. But is it supposed to get worse today or not?
Well, I know a few days ago, like I saw Glenn Burns, who's the meteorologist here in Atlanta for one of the...
For WSB,
yeah. Yeah, Channel 2 News. He had said that we were expecting to get, like, the eye of the storm in our area, and I don't know that it was necessarily that bad. We got a little bit of rainfall. I know there was a little bit of a storm that came through last night. It knocked down a tree in my neighborhood near our neighborhood pool. But, yeah, to your point, it's not been super awful, I guess, in regards to rain and storms and that kind of thing. But, yeah, we were supposed to be getting, I think, a little bit worse than what we currently are.
Yeah, so not too bad, not too shabby, just not a great day to go to the pool. So,
of course, always on my day off.
Well,
it decides to rain.
To happen, for sure. GVA news, not a whole lot going on there. We still have our two new docs, Dr. Yi and Dr. Seek, who are on board. We actually brought on Dr. Lauren Dempsey to help us with some Sundays moving forward. She is a UGA grad from this area who has been in the Chicago area for the last 7 or 8 years practicing. Fortunate to have her come on board to help maybe give us a little bit of relief and help our clients and patients out on Sundays. So we definitely will welcome her in July. Lobby's still open. I was speaking with one of our clients, I forget who, maybe Miss Williams the other day, and I'm like, I'm really pleasantly surprised at how well it's gone. The first week we were kind of freaked out because we had a bunch of employees that had never worked here with the lobby open.
Oh, that's still the case.
And I was very concerned about having to do 50% curbside and 50% lobby. Are we going to wear a mask? Are we going to require hand sanitization? Are we going to have these different lanes coming in and out? And I think the right decision was made by us that we just said, let's try to go back to 100% normal. And it's felt pretty normal.
I don't know. I don't know how much time you spend at the front desk, but in the late afternoons, they get very, very busy. I think almost so much that people come in and have a seat because we have a very big lobby, right? What are there, like 8 benches out front?
At least, yeah.
People will sit down and they then in turn don't get back up and I guess go to the desk. And so people essentially are sitting there kind of curbside-ish, right? Like being respectful, staying away from other people, but yet they haven't necessarily been taken care of. That makes sense.
So we may need a greeter at the door to check people in, maybe upon entry.
It's not necessarily a bad idea. It's something that, you know, we have brought on a new receptionist, and she currently is kind of being that for us in the moment. Not every day of the week, obviously, but when she's up there, she's observing and trying to learn and train from the other receptionists, but she's essentially front and center. And so what she's been doing is just greeting people and then, you know, starting the check-in process and then having them go sit down and then alerting another receptionist when they're free. And so it's not necessarily 100% right yet, but yeah, it's an interesting concept, right? So I think we do have some people that would rather stay in the car. We have people that come in with a mask. We have people that come in without masks. I know right now a bunch of our vaccinated doctors are kind of like in a weird place, right? Because they're like, I want to be respectful to the client. So if they're wearing a mask in the room, and should I wear one or should I not wear one? And so I know it's been like a topic of discussion. And I think ultimately they have decided like just to not wear one because they are completely vaccinated. unless the client asks them to. But there is still that like little bit of weird feeling when you're in the exam room and someone else is wearing a mask and you're not.
Yeah. I mean, I think the right answer is if you're comfortable not wearing a mask, don't wear it. But if someone asks you to,
of course,
and you're not opposed to that, out of respect, absolutely do that. I would say 90% of our staff is not wearing a mask now.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, yeah. So anyway, hopefully getting back to normal. We've not heard of any huge outbreaks. You know, Memorial Day was a big day for me. I was kind of wondering, are we going to have a big fallout effect because of all these people getting together? But the news that I watch, people just continue to gather and get back to normal life, concerts, etc.
Have you seen any of the social media pictures, I guess, in regards to Disney World?
No, I've not heard anything about Disney.
So apparently Disney lifted their mask ban as well, or their mask mandate. And so I saw some pictures on social media where it's just like swarms of people like up and down the road, like busier than Disney has probably ever been.
Well, I guess people are waiting, have been waiting to get back. You know, last year was the busiest year the national parks have ever had. Are the statistics there. And so probably Disney and some of these other big entertainment regions and area, really the whole hospitality industry, is going to probably have a gangbuster year if they can staff the venues and the restaurants,
yeah,
et cetera.
So that's a huge thing, right? So like a lot of the amusement parks and things, like I know there's in Sandusky, Ohio, there's Cedar Point, and they have definitely said that their summer hours are limited due to staffing. They've tried to incentivize new hires and kind of summer work with bonuses and increased wages and that kind of thing, but still they're not able to get the workforce volume up in order to be open and fully operational for the entire summer.
Same thing with our industry, right? We've talked about this before and we'll continue. We're continually hiring. We're growing like crazy. And yet it's just hard to keep up with adequate staff. Many of the emergency clinics around us have shut down because they cannot staff them. And
right.
I don't know if they'll ever open back up or not. That remains to be seen. But, you know, I think the clinics that are going to do well moving forward, whether you're privately owned or, you know, certainly if you're a corporate group, we're really... we realized that labor was super important, you know, not too long ago, but it's become kind of the limiting factor in what you can provide and what your growth potential is, in my opinion. So.
Yeah. I mean, I had a conversation with our HR business partner through ADP a couple of days ago, and she kind of phrased it as like a labor war, in the sense that like, even if like we're willing to hire people that don't have any previous experience in the animal industry, that there are other professions out there that are doing the same thing. And so before we used to be kind of fighting for qualified people, and now we're just fighting for people no matter what.
Which may be a good thing.
Could be.
So historically, if you had veterinary experience, no matter what it was, good, bad, or indifferent, you would have kind of a leg up during the hiring process. In our minds, you know, and a lot of times they didn't work out because these individuals came with really bad training and bad habits. But they had the experience, and so they were a little bit easier to plug and play.
Exactly.
We always talk about hire for attitude, not skills. You can always train the skills, but mm-hmm. yet, you know, if somebody shows up with skills, you're willing to deal with a little bit of their attitude, again, just to kind of plug them in immediately. But this is going to force us, and we've been doing this for 10, 15 years. We figured out, you know, here that our receptionist does not need to have knowledge of all the drug recommendations, preventative recommendations, vaccine recommendations. That's a technician, a doctor's job. And so it's just going to kind of force the issue to get those people who have that attitude and maybe the... I guess not the knowledge base in veterinary medicine, but maybe the people skills.
Certainly. People skills are one of those things that I think a lot of people refer to them as soft, and they're not necessarily taught. You can't teach them to someone else. Most oftentimes they're innate or they're honed by that individual specifically. Yeah, it's a tough market right now for sure.
All right. So let's jump into some stories. Healthy Pet Happy Life segment. I guess I don't really have anything there except, well, I do have something.
We should have lots of some things.
Number one, we have a new shirt that we're wearing on Fridays that is really cool. The staff really likes the new soft gray shirt.
Yep. So the it's essentially our logo with the state of Georgia, or our, I guess, name with the state of Georgia on the back, in a kind of a 70s bubbly lettering, and then it's a three color print.
Yeah. So very cool, very different. Has the Healthy Pet Happy Life logoed on one of the sleeves. We are starting to see copperhead bites again.
Yep.
Dr. Williams had one yesterday. And so usually that's an early spring kind of a thing that we see, which we didn't really see that many this spring.
But I think our weather's been a little weird.
Yeah. I think as it heats up, even though it's been very wet this weekend and mild, we're going to start to see copperhead poisonings much more frequently. So if your pet is exposed to a copperhead bite, or you even think that, which typically the first sign you're going to see is major swelling of a distal limb or maybe a nose if they're super curious about the copperhead. So get them to the veterinarian ASAP. When we know that that's what happened, we like to go ahead and give them some anti-venom to start the treatment process along with good supportive care. So,
sure. So it can be essentially fatal, right?
Can be fatal in spite of doing everything.
Of course.
In spite of doing everything, kind of depends on the amount of venom that the pet receives, the size of the pet. There's a lot of factors.
I don't know if it's necessarily myth or truth or whatnot, but I've always heard that like the little baby copperheads are actually the most venomous.
You know, you're probably right. It's the whole concentration thing. And then, you know, the lower the area to the ground, like a dachshund that gets bit on the underside, it's almost opposite of what you think. It's kind of like paint. Like you would think if you take this, you know, big room, or you take a small room, you put a really rich color, it's going to make it bigger, and it's just the opposite.
Yeah.
So most people, and it's the same way. So I had not read about that recently. I'm sure Dr. Reese will help us out. But yeah, it's kind of opposite of what you would think. Sometimes the bigger the dog and the more mature the snake, the worse the scenario versus small dog. Yeah, it's crazy.
Weird.
So, fortunately, we only have copperheads here. We do not have a rattlesnake problem.
We do have water moccasins, though, especially by my house. So I live on like a riverbed, if you will. We're kind of up the hill, but as you go down...
Can you see water moccasins down there?
So I don't, but like down my neighborhood, if you go down my street, the hill kind of flattens out. And so people essentially have the river running right through their backyards. And so they do see water moccasins down there.
So like in Texas, cottonmouths. Are we talking the same thing?
I don't know about a cottonmouth per se, but like... water moccasins. I am not very good with my snake species identification.
Well, that's something we don't really have to typically worry about here, the rattlesnakes, but the copperheads can be quite deadly. So as you look that up.
So I guess a water moccasin is a cottonmouth, essentially.
Okay.
So yeah, we're talking about the same thing.
So they open their mouth and it's wide inside, looks like cotton. That's why they're called cottonmouths.
Yep. And so they are found in Georgia. But don't naturally necessarily occur here in northern Georgia.
I would think that little creek by y'all's house runs too quickly to have them, but
I don't know. It's pretty stagnant at sometimes, and it's actually a river. It's pretty wide and deep. So, but like I said, we're probably 90 feet up a hill, and then as the neighborhood deepens or you go down the road, the hill flattens out, and then people have this running through their backyards.
Very cool to have water moccasins in your backyard.
Not cool.
So, all right. Couple of stories. We got together right before the show, and I think had very similar stories. Headline was it yesterday
that Saturday.
The Biden's dog died, and my thoughts immediately went to it was major, but in fact it was, I believe Champ was 13 years old.
Yeah.
Both German Shepherd dogs. So interesting fact. In vet school, we learned to abbreviate German Shepherds as GSDs, German Shepherd Dog.
Yes.
So I just think that's kind of, I mean, we don't say Border Collie dog, BCD. Oh. We don't say Labrador dog,
but
German Shepherd dog. So anyway, Champ was evidently old. Well, he was old at 13, and he passed away at home, according to Dr. Jill Biden's Facebook post, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Major is still undergoing training.
Yeah, my understanding is that he back in March, I guess the both of them came back to the White House. But yeah,
I don't know that he's going to be invited back to the White House anytime soon, he being major.
I think he was back there. And I feel like when I was watching some news clips or whatnot about Champ passing along, Jill Biden and like Kelly Clarkson were out in the front lawn and they were playing with the dogs and that kind of thing. I don't know. But yeah, Champ was, to your point, 13 years old. And so we're going to, I guess no one has really said exactly why he's passed. As I told you, oftentimes with celebrities, this is what I feel like it happens, right? Like, oh, my dog passed. And it's like you never really get a true diagnosis. But their comments are peacefully at home, which...
I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, me either. A lot of times, and I think people like come into the practice sometimes with critically ill pets and they expect them to just die in their sleep at home. And for the most times, like, pets just don't pass that way.
That doesn't happen, right? It's a very long, drawn out hospice kind of a situation.
Exactly.
Without hospice. So that was an interesting story. The U.S. Open is going on today.
Is that tennis?
There,
golf? I don't know.
Yes, but it's the golf U.S. Open.
So there's one of both?
There is.
Oh. At least I knew that. Check for me.
It's being played in San Diego, California. Beautiful course. They've got a bunch of hang gliders off the cliffs there and around the ocean. So you're watching the golf tournament and you see all these crazy hang gliders like in the background. So it's pretty cool.
Like, it's not paid entertainment. This is just like people out there on their normal weekend.
Recreationally hang gliding. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So
have you ever thought about it? You have a fear of heights, right?
Yeah. I don't think I would.
No?
I have. Have you ever done the paragliding off the back of a boat in the ocean?
Parasailing, yes.
I would not do that.
Yeah.
Scary? I mean,
it's pretty scary because like you hear the, I don't even know what it's called, but like the belts, you know, you can hear them like grinding on the metal. And of course, like they're not going to like fall apart or
do
whatever.
Do they strap
but, like,
you in or you're just sitting on a seat?
Oh no, they strap you in, but you're attached to the parachute that you're wearing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so like, no, thank you.
But it's funny because there's a Netflix show, it's called Who Killed Sarah, and the girl actually dies in a parasailing boat accident.
Well, there you go.
But it was
further answers that question.
There was some malicious intent there, so I think the parasail gear was altered. But anyways, yeah, no. I don't know. I would go hang gliding.
I might go hang gliding off like a meadow kind of a thing. Not right off the cliff, but you see these more sloped where
you
start running and you jump and then you kind of go and then maybe it opens up a little bit bigger.
Do you remember a few years ago there was like a guy, I feel like in Switzerland or something, and he was hang gliding with an instructor and the instructor and he weren't connected together. And so when they went off over whatever, like he was literally hanging on by just his fingers. Do you remember hearing about this?
No.
Oh, gosh.
I wonder if people are hang gliding with their pets, with their dogs.
Oh, that's scary. I hope not.
I mean, they're doing everything else. They're putting them in boats. They're teaching them how to skateboard.
So let's talk about boats, right? I actually saw a...
By boats, I was
social
saying
media post.
Kayak is where my mind went. But go ahead.
Okay. You're not a motorboat.
Yeah, like...
So I saw a pretty sad, devastating social media post from a woman kind of just basically not really looking for attention, but somewhat putting out a PSA, if you will. She and her husband had a very, I guess he was like 5 or 6 years old, like a water dog, I'm going to assume a Portuguese water dog, very curly, dark coated. I don't know these people specifically, so I'm just kind of looking at pictures. But anyway, so they said that they often go out on their pontoon boat and the dog is often with them and he hangs out on the boat off leash. And they've been out on the boat probably 100,000 times. Well, for whatever reason, this day, the dog actually jumped off the front of the boat while the boat was going and died. Obviously, got sucked into the propellers and was a hot mess there.
Oh, wow.
But her point is that don't take for granted because your dogs can't talk to you. You don't know what they're thinking, what they're seeing, all of these things that even on a boat, you should always have your pet on a leash. And that was her point. And I've never really thought about it because every time I've ever seen people on like Lake Lanier here or even like Hartwell, their dogs are just kind of like willy-nilly running around.
Yeah, can jump off anytime they want.
Yeah, they could jump off. You could hit a big wave. They could fall backwards. Anything like that. So I never really thought about it, but her plea was really sad. Like I said, it was super heartbreaking to hear about them. But yeah, their dog had just, for whatever reason, they were going at a normal speed, she said, and he jumped off the front and
they never
got...
saw the dog again.
Mm-mm.
That's always a hard thing, no matter how you lose your pet, dog or cat. If you never find them, whether they're, you know, alive or dead, there's always this, you lack closure with those situations. And so, you know, I'm sure the assumption, same thing with people. I was unfortunately down on the Alabama/Florida coast several years ago. And the day before we got there, a teenage boy got evidently caught up in a, is it called a rift current, tide, rift current?
I don't know.
Went out to swim and started struggling. The dad tried to swim out to get him, and they never saw the boy again.
Oh, gosh.
So it's pretty sad when those things happen, for sure. But, yeah, be careful. Accidents do happen.
Of course.
People, pets, and vets, unfortunately.
Yep.
Did we mention that we do have, I think maybe 50 episodes ago, we do have one cat named Indy that sails along the eastern seaboard with his family.
I don't know that we ever mentioned Indy, but
so,
yeah,
Indy the
comes
cat.
In once a year for annual stuff while the family's back here
we
in the Atlanta
area. We definitely
have
to plan it because, I mean, they are not on land very much, and so it's a very much a forward-booked kind of a thing.
Yes,
so,
of course.
Back to...
stories.
Stories and Biden, President Biden. So Juneteenth became a national holiday, and I think... so. Congress, the Senate had to pass that.
So you said that like it was nothing, right? So Juneteenth became a national holiday.
I'm trying to think. This was like Thursday or Friday this happened, and Juneteenth was Saturday.
So the reason it was celebrated on Friday is because Juneteenth was a Saturday.
Right.
But like for me, and I'm making fun of you, but like just say it again, like, oh, Juneteenth is now a federal holiday. Like how crazy is that? That like literally there is a new federal holiday.
So that's where I was going.
So,
like I didn't even know how this happened, but evidently somebody introduces the bill. And it either passes or it doesn't, and boom, you've got a new federal holiday.
Yeah.
Do you know the last federal holiday prior to Juneteenth?
Well, only because I looked at the article.
Okay.
And it was MLK Day.
MLK Day, and President Ronald Reagan was presiding at that time. Stevie Wonder played a big role in getting this holiday passed.
Oh, wow.
It took a while for it to happen.
And when was this?
1963.
63 or 83? 63?
Where did I write it down?
83.
You have my copy. So, yeah. And so, it's not on on Martin Luther King's birthday. His birthday, what does it say, the 15th of January?
Mm-hmm.
But it's
essentially the third Monday
in
January.
The third Monday is when it's celebrated. So, like many, not all, but many. So, Christmas is always on the 25th, but many of our holidays are celebrated on the fill-in-the-blank Monday of the month.
Well, to be fair, I think in order for, like, the federal holiday to somewhat always have, like, federal buildings closed and that kind of thing to observe the holiday, they have to be on a weekday, right? Because federal buildings and that kind of thing aren't open on Saturdays and Sundays anyways. And so I think that's why they kind of made it the third Monday of the month versus like on the 15th, right? Because if it was on the 15th, it would rotate days of the week.
So Juneteenth basically is a celebration of the end of slavery.
Yes.
I mean, that's the simplest way I can put it. And so almost unanimously this bill passed, which was a very good thing in this day and age.
Yeah,
kind of,
it's fantastic.
Kind of unifying, hopefully, everyone, including the politicians. So I was super happy to see that. But yeah, I just
think it's so crazy in the sense that like even like, and I don't watch the news or whatever, but like social media outlets and stuff. Like I saw a couple things here and there, you
not
know.
Not that much. Though.
Like I think Justin Timberlake was, or Usher was actually at the signing, and there are pictures of him and Kamala Harris and that kind of thing. But there wasn't like a big to do. There was no like giant celebration. I don't know. It just
kind of came out of nowhere,
yeah.
And then they announced it, and it's like in 2 days, and now it's gone.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I would have thought that there was like a bigger production, I guess, in order to get like a federal holiday passed, but I guess not.
Okay.
But very cool.
Have you ever heard of a Black Russian Terrier?
As far as like a dog?
Yeah.
No.
Meet the Black Russian Terrier. Update your knowledge. So I'm not going to go very deep into this, but it's a 50 to 60 kilogram black terrier dog that really does look like a
okay,
a
so
giant.
We are in the United States. 50 to 60 kgs equals...
So times 2.2. So 110 to 125-ish pound dog.
Thank goodness I've never seen one. That sounds like a massive beast.
Not as big as a Mastiff, as an English Mastiff. Maybe you've seen, many of us have seen giant Schnauzers. And
yes.
My thoughts are they only are black in coat color. Is that correct? I've never seen a silver one, a gray one. I've only seen black giant Schnauzers. So is that a breed standard?
That is all I've ever seen. I don't know that that is a breed standard.
And so they're around 45 to 50 kilos. And then the Bouvier de Flandre.
Never seen one of those either.
Which I don't think I've ever seen one of those. But that very, very similar to the giant Schnauzer. So,
do you know what Bouvier means? Is that dog in some... Because there are a couple of dog breeds with Bouvier.
I don't know what Bouvier means.
I'm going to look it up real fast.
But these three dogs are very similar. And the article didn't really give me a whole lot of information other than it said if you find somebody that has one of these dogs and or breeds them, really try to get as much knowledge from them as you can because they are going to be so passionate about this breed, which is true of pretty much every breed. That we see the breeders, the people that are super involved are typically super passionate, whether they are breeding a dog or maybe they've got a dive docking, you know, border collie. They're really into their trade. So
Bouvier in French, apparently, according to Google, means herdsman.
Herdsman. And what does de Flanders mean?
Well, I would imagine like the herdsman of Flanders. I don't know.
Of flowers or something. Isn't the what's now that's a floor. Florida, the little French thing.
Oh, let's see. Des Flanders. According to... So it's a herding dog. Dun-da-da-da. They can apparently come in a ton of different colors. Black, brindle, fawn, salt and pepper, gray, black, and brown. Who knew?
Who would have known? All right, so let's move on from the dog breeds to artificial intelligence. So
one second. So
oh my gosh.
I'm sorry. So I'm like sitting here reading Wikipedia or whatever about this Bouvier de Flanders, and how weird is it that like one of the little like bullet points are their bite force?
Well, I would think.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily, but it says the Bouvier that has been taught to bite will exert up to 1,000 pounds of pressure per square
PSI.
Inch.
Yeah,
that's.
It's a lot.
That could break your arm.
Yeah.
That's insane.
We worry about being dog bit here, and even the little chihuahuas, I mean, they scare the bejeebies out of you. They usually don't break the skin, but it just is very shocking and upsetting. But some of these bigger breeds of dogs, I got bitten by a Rottweiler when I was pre-vet, and the Rottweiler bit through my hand. Like top to bottom.
Oh, that sounds terrifying.
And it was not a very pleasant experience. So, okay. Moving on to artificial intelligence.
AI.
So we have talked a little bit about the role of AI, you know, kind of coming into our industry. And as we get busier and we have less labor force, which we talked about earlier, we are trying to look for efficiencies. And so we now have facial recognition software in some of our lab machines to help us read out your analysis results.
Right. So it uses that. I guess AI in order to differentiate between different types of cells and
bacteria. Teach the machine how to recognize
kind of
different things that we're looking for. There's a new fecal analyzer out there that's fairly new. X-ray films are being read out.
Yes, there are new companies coming out of the woodwork. Literally on a weekly basis, I get a new call for a new AI radiology interpretation company that, you know, wants to talk to us and that kind of thing. And so essentially they're just putting, I think most of them are starting with either chest or abdomen, one of the two, just kind of looking at vital organ specifically.
I think chest initially, but I could be wrong, it could be flip-flopped, and then they're kind of moving into the abdomen. So it's just super interesting. It kind of makes sense, but yet it makes me a little skeptical. You have to have a little bit of human involvement.
Well, my understanding is that radiographs in like human hospitals and CTs are essentially read with AI initially as well.
And then if there's anything suspicious, it goes.
That's why you can get your results so quickly when you're on ER.
Yeah.
Right. Which it may not feel quick, but 4 hours is a really short turnaround time to get a CT readout when you're in that emergency room at the human hospital. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. So, I mean, this article is just talking over in Europe, some employees are using AI for employee discipline. And I didn't
That's
really get
interesting.
deep into the article, but the proponent on the employee side is kind of ixnaying, you know, this from happening. So I really
in
just
regards to like punctuality, I know you just said that you didn't read a ton
I mean,
of
I
it,
think it's
but
punctuality. I think, you know, probably it is. Are you working? Are you actively performing your job? So they're just putting all these parameters in to, you know, video monitoring. And again, if you're normal, then you're not going to be kicked out to be, you know, observed by a human. But
right.
It's just super interesting. Big Brother, not the 1984, the book with Big Brother watching you, kind of seems to be happening over in Europe. So not necessarily a bad thing, but not necessarily a good thing either.
It essentially, I guess, for most of this article, it talks about how they're going to start this in the food delivery drivers in Spain.
So pause. So a lot of our manufacturer reps, very similar thing happens. They have these little beacons going out to show where they are so that the parent company can see, are they sitting, is their car in the parking lot of Russell Ridge Animal Hospital? How long was it there? You know, probably did the door open? Did the door close? When did they leave? So it's been around for a little while, and just super interesting how to kind of keep people accountable.
Yeah, I think is it still considered artificial intelligence? Like something that we're so used to, right? But like the checkout, like the self-checkout, the scanners and that kind of thing, that's really not AI, is it?
That's not. That, you know, we talked about this a while back. It seemed silly when we were having to do it because there wasn't labor there helping you and we're doing their job. But now, or during the pandemic, most of us preferred to do self-checkout. So, you know, I think maybe the AI part of it is the monitoring. Are you, you know, is that patron
scanning everything that they have.
What
yeah.
is the inventory? Is the inventory checking up? And if you have, you know, Kroger number 7402, all of a sudden their inventory counts are starting to become off, then there's probably theft going on. And so they're going to beef up the security and, you know, kind of post some signs and do some
I've seen
like
some
that.
Articles kind of floating about and fluttering about for like Walmart stores that are going to completely do away with their human checkout people. And it's going to be all self-checkout.
So, yeah, they being the supermarkets and big box stores have kind of seen the labor market,
tank essentially.
Yeah. they saw it coming a lot quicker than we did to go to these kiosks.
Yeah, of course.
So last story I have, thank you, Dr. Reese. She saw, is that dog's name in here?
It's not, it just says border collie.
A working border collie, which I saw that dog in the hospital this past week as well, who is an employee of the geese police. And so there's a guy, I believe he's out of New Jersey, David something is his name, Richard David. No. Well, David's his name. You can go to the website you can go to geesepolice.com or org and figure out, you know, a little more information that I'm giving you here. But essentially these border collies are used to keep geese off of golf courses and other venues, such as probably museums and Statue of Liberty grounds, things like that, because the geese can be very destructive and can create quite the mess. And so rather than, I guess I don't know how to say this, other than eliminating the geese, firearms or other methods, they have border collies out there chasing the geese off and kind of patrolling the grounds and not letting them sit there and eat and defecate.
Yeah.
And so around here, it's a lot of the baseball fields, there is a Canadian goose problem as well. And what they do around here is they set out these little fake coyote mannequins.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
At the baseball fields?
Yeah, when they're done with a baseball game and everything's been raked up and, you know, they're ready and they've covered the infield or the pitcher's mound, at least at Hebron, they go out and they put one or two little mannequins out there.
Fake. That's so weird.
To keep the geese off.
That's super, super weird.
Back home, my brother Alan, in order to keep the Canadian, the Sandhill Cranes, similar but different, these great big birds, in order to keep them from destroying the crops and digging up the seed, they have these almost like a bazooka gun that's not shooting the cranes, but it goes off periodically.
It just kind of scares them away.
To scare them away.
Oh,
keep
wow.
them from lighting on the ground.
So is it just like air, or are they
I don't know what the load is, but I mean, yeah, it's a big boom boom.
Oh, wow. So like they hear it at home.
They
like
hear
it's,
it and they yeah they.
No. People
leave.
People hear it and they're like, oh
yeah,
okay, that's cool.
This is out in the middle of nowhere and around Ropesville, Texas. So I mean that's it.
Okay,
yeah,
but like let's say that there was a house or someone driving down the road. Like it's something normal. People just hear it. They know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's so weird
boom.
To me.
Big boom. So. Huh. All right, do you have anything else?
The only other thing I have, and you seemed like you knew more about this than I did when I read it. So I read an article in the USA Today that kind of struck me a little bit, and it says that 300,000 Americans may live with a chronic deadly disease transmitted by the kissing bug.
Right.
And so when I read it a little bit more, it kind of caught my eye because every summer, right, like you hear people talk about how they're going to protect their pets from fleas and ticks, and oftentimes ticks will get on people, and then we hear about people getting Lyme disease and that kind of thing. But I had never heard of any other sort of like blood-sucking vector to transmit disease to people. So I'm super naive in this whole situation, but do you know how to pronounce their like actual name? It's
Trypanosoma cruzi. Is that right? Trypanosoma.
It's like triatomine bug. Does that sound triatomine bugs? Also known as
the kissing bugs?
Bug.
No. What the disease? The organism is Trypanosoma cruzi. Is it not?
I don't know. It doesn't say organism that it transmits.
It is, and it causes Chagas disease.
Chagas in humans.
Chaga.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's essentially a lifelong painful disease that essentially can lead to death.
Yep.
And I did also read in a separate article, not necessarily the one in USA Today, but dogs can also be affected by this. And so...
Yeah, I think it's dogs, and I don't know if it's Middle East, but it's not necessarily in our area of
right.
the U.S. It's from other countries. And so I remember learning about this in parasitology. There's a whole group of these...
It says South and Central America, typically, in Mexico. But, I mean, nowadays, when we have so many...
Imports
and that kind of mm-hmm. thing, and then, like, you know, people traveling to and from foreign countries all the time. Granted, not last year, but I think people already are making up for the time that they didn't last year. But yeah, you could essentially carry these bugs around. And so what I read in regards to like kind of keeping them at bay for your pets and probably for yourself is just increasing night light. So
night light to keep the kissing bugs. So these are little, I don't know, they look like little stink bugs, similar what I would call a little stink bug or squash bug, I guess is the way I would describe them. And I think they like feed, I think they sense maybe the CO2 or something around the nose or mouth and they feed, which is why they're called kissing bugs. They feed on, I don't know if it's dead skin or if they, I think they break the skin. So maybe they were trying to take a blood meal. And I believe the organism is actually passed in the stool. And like it would contaminate.
It's so crazy that you remember all of this. So
one.
Yeah, so there's a part of the article that says the kissing bug usually feeds around a person's face when the person is sleeping, which is how the insect got its name, kissing on the face, right? Obviously. And then after feeding, the bug defecates near the wound, and then people become infected after
rubbing
they rub that fecal material into the wound or near the eye. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Bugs are disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, bed bugs. There's things out there that we don't really know are out there.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't really think about, but they're out there. I think that disease, I don't know if you use the whole 5-chloro whatever was supposed to kill corona. It's going to be some drug like that. But I think it gets in the tissues and sets up in the muscle tissues is what I recall about Chagas. And I think it can be skeletal muscle, but I know it can be heart muscle. I think usually heart, like a cardiomyopathy or cardiac myositis is what usually will kill people.
Yeah. I mean, basically all it says is that a lot of people will have this, but physicians, like medical doctors, are underdiagnosing it because they're not necessarily, I guess, taught too much about all of these kinds of things. And so this goes back to that whole One Health situation that we talked about historically. But I thought it was super interesting. I guess one more thing to put on the list of being terrified of when you go outside or sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about what's in the ocean, right?
Yeah. I don't want to. I saw some real ugly fish that live in the dark sides of the ocean when I went to Florida this most recent trip back in April.
So,
and
bad stuff everywhere. Can't worry too much about it. Just be safe and be careful.
Yeah, right. Way to end with a Debbie Downer there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No. Right. Make sure to check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Make sure to follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please, wherever you're listening to this podcast, hit subscribe or download. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.